Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and guess who's with me? That would be Mr. Charles W. Chuck Bryant, who, based on his headwear today, his headwear choice today, apparently has joined the Cuban Revolution.
Right.
Is that correct, Chuck?
It's Friday hat day, so I'm doing my best Fidel Castro.
Yeah. Viva Shea.
It's called a combat cap. You like that?
It is. It's very cool. Mm-hmm. It's very cool, Chuck. You want to know something cooler?
Yes.
Okay. So, actually, I don't know if cool is the right word. Maybe horrific is a better word.
Okay.
There is a study conducted here in the States. And, of course, you know, the United States, like most other countries, have a long history of, you know, well-meaning but really misplaced medical experiments or
right,
psychological like, experiments.
Sure. Like giving LSD to unsuspecting Americans, which we've talked about.
Right, exactly. This one was a little different. This one involved separating twins who were up for adoption at birth in the state of New York. And there were, I think, 13 sets of twins and one set of triplets. And they were all separated through
sad.
This one adoption agency as part of a study of nature versus nurture.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the only thing the adopting parents knew was that their kid was part of an ongoing child psychology study.
Right.
And so these researchers were allowed access to these kids over their lifetimes. And then it went from the 60s to, I think, 1980. And the guy who was running the show, his name was Peter Neubauer, right? Uh-huh. He was a child psychologist. He apparently realized that if he were to publish this study, basically he'd be lynched, right?
Right.
That by the time 1980 rolled around, people didn't think too highly of separating twins. Like the ethics of experimentation had changed enough.
Not based on the results, just based on the fact that he did this to begin
that
with.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
So basically what he did was take all of the research. He had the study. It was ready to be published. And he sealed it, and it cannot be opened until 2066.
Really?
And it's sitting in the archives at Yale University. I imagine 2066, he imagined he'd be long dead by then.
Right.
So in 2066, we're going to find out a lot about nature versus nurture.
I will be long dead, but you might.
I'm supposed to make it to 2041, as you know.
That's what your death clock said.
The death clock says so. I don't think so. I'll be long dead, too.
Yeah, I've got my Vegas odds are against that.
Right, yeah. So, okay, so Chuck, that's an example of a really terrible experiment.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Have you heard of savants, autistic savants?
I have indeed.
You have, okay. They actually provide a much less horrible natural experiment, perfect natural experiment, to study the brain.
Right.
Okay? You want to talk about savants for a second? Because I'm going to explain later how they make this perfect experiment.
Sure, Josh. Autistic savants are people who are mentally deficient in some areas, but excel in others. Like, a lot of times, I know there's that kid that plays the piano. Have you seen him, the jazz trio?
I have not.
He's 15 or so now, and when he first started playing, he was really young and very advanced musically, so, and he's autistic savant, so that's one good example.
Yeah, music comes out a lot in savantism. There's a guy named Blind Tom. He was this African-American guy at the turn of the last century.
Not Hippie Rob.
Oh, not Hippie Rob, no, okay. Blind Tom. And he was severely autistic, and he could play pretty much any piece of music that he heard once on the piano.
Interesting. Well, yeah. Autistic savant is different than autism, though, aren't those two?
Sure. Not everybody who is a savant is autistic, and not everybody who's autistic is a savant.
Correct.
So there is, like, yes, that's a good point. There is a very, I guess, a subgroup called autistic savants. And perhaps the most famous savant is a guy named Kim Peek.
Rain Man?
Rain Man.
Is that
exactly
what they call him?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's the real Rain Man is what they call him.
Oh, I thought I just made that up.
No, you were dead on, Chuck. Okay. You have an amazing intuition.
Maybe I'm a savant.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think so. But maybe.
I'm terrible at math, so I doubt it.
Yeah, that comes into play, too, as well. But Kim Peek is this guy who, the guy who wrote Rain Man, Barry Morrow, met in 1984. And in 1988, the movie came out. So he was very much based on Kim Peek.
Did not know that.
Yeah, the guy can, if you tell him your birthday, your birth date,
right,
he'll tell you what day of the week you were born on.
Oh, cool.
He apparently has read 12,000 books around that. He started reading and memorizing things at 14 months.
Wow.
But he has severe brain damage, developmental brain damage.
Really?
So he can't like button his own shirt.
Right.
He can't care for himself. Luckily, he's got a really good dad who cares for him.
Sure.
But the cool thing about this story is after Barry Morrow won an Oscar, he gave it to Kim Peek.
Oh, did he write the screenplay?
Yeah.
Ah.
And so Kim Peek carries it around everywhere he goes.
I would too.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, so the reason why savants, and there have been some really spectacular ones throughout the ages, provide such a great natural experiment for us to investigate the brain is because most of them almost exclusively have left damage to the left hemisphere of the brain.
Right.
And, you know, just the very fact that they can excel in math but can't button their own shirts, it provides this kind of certain framework to compare the rest of our brains to.
Right, right.
You know, it's an excellent comparison, right?
Right. And the left side is more about detail, correct? And the right side is more about the big picture?
You love the lateralization of brain function, don't you?
I do.
Yes.
Well, I like the brain period because it's still so mysterious, you know. It's amazing how little we know still about the brain.
Yeah, it's amazing and disconcerting.
Yes, at the same time.
I predict the next 50 years are going to see tremendous advances in our understanding of the brain, in part because of the study of savants, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you were talking about the lateralization of brain function. Yeah, you were right. Left is the detail-oriented side.
Right.
And right sees the big picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some people who are studying savants. And, you know, like I said, one of the reasons why they are interesting is because almost all of them have damage in one form or another
right.
to the left side of the brain.
Right.
And even more suspicious is you can maybe get in a car wreck or have a stroke. And if the left side's impaired, people have been known to basically come out of it a savant.
Right.
And sometimes autistic savant.
Interesting.
Right. So one of the people that I'd like to talk about today who's studying savants is Dr. Alan Snyder.
Yes, Schneider, as I like to call him.
He is an expat American who runs the Center for the Mind, that's the British spelling of center, in Sydney, Australia.
The Centra.
And he is he's a very eccentric person.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
He really is. But he's been studying savants for years, and he has come up with a theory about mindsets, and it's based on the lateralization of brain function.
I love that. Yeah, the mindset, basically, his theory is that mindsets are created, they're personal, basically definitions on your experience.
Right.
So if you see, you know, a bear in the woods, well, that's a little less common. Let's say a dog. In your driveway, you'll note things about the dog, that he's furry, that he has a tail, that he walks on four legs, that kind of thing. And your brain kind of stores that away, so next time you don't see a dog, you think, oh my gosh, what is that creature walking toward me?
What is that? I've never seen one of those
before.
Yeah,
and he calls these mindsets.
Right, so Chuck, when we're basically assaulted with stimuli at all times.
All the time.
Raw data, sure. Basically, from like the humming of a fluorescent light
right.
To you know conversations that we overhear in right. restaurants, that kind of thing.
Colors, actions, tastes, smells.
Yeah, we're constantly assaulted with sensory input, right? We have this thing called latent inhibition,
right?
Which is a brain process they're still, again, trying to get a handle on. But latent inhibition is basically the process by which we filter out stuff we already know,
right?
Stuff we can identify, so we're not constantly focused on the buzzing of a fluorescent light.
Exactly, or hearing all the voices in a restaurant. Obviously, that'd be maddening.
Right, and actually, as a side note, schizophrenics have very low latent inhibition.
Indeed.
So they're constantly assaulted with all of this stuff. But
right.
they also have the added horrible side effect of attaching meaning to these snippets of conversation, right? So say
right.
specifically you're hearing voices and you're not able to externalize or internalize,
exactly.
meaning you can't tell the voices are coming from your head
right.
and you're attaching meaning to them.
Right.
That's schizophrenia, right?
Yeah, that's horrible.
So it's Snyder's belief, and I'm pretty sure the medical establishment at large is that we're getting all of this raw data. It's being accepted into our right hemisphere, right?
Right.
Which sees the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it sends it over to the left hemisphere, which processes it into details, which we hang on to. This interplay between the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere creates those mindsets you were talking about, right?
Exactly.
Which, like you said, is how we can see a dog and come to understand what a dog is. And
exactly.
Then later on, when we see another dog, we just say, oh, that's a dog.
Right.
Like we kind of categorize things in packets, right?
Sure.
So we say all that to say this. If supposedly we have damage to the left side of the brain, the detail-oriented brain, all we're doing is getting raw data,
right.
And we're not able to create these mindsets.
Exactly.
There's this wonderful article by a guy named Lawrence Osborne, and it was in the New York Times in 2003 called Savant for a Day.
Uh-huh.
And he spent the day with Alan Snyder, and the whole article is very long, but it's definitely worth reading. He chronicles, you know, his day with Alan Snyder. And one of the things that Snyder mentions is that some of the savants that he studies, when they come to see him at the Center for the Mind,
yeah,
they may have been there dozens of times, but they can get lost every single time just because of the change of shadows.
Right.
It looks different. They're getting different input.
Uh-huh. That
right?
makes sense. Sure.
So they'll get lost because it doesn't look the same way it did that last time, and they can't form mindsets saying,
right,
this is the direction I'm going, right?
Right.
So since people with left hemisphere brain damage tend to be savants, right? Or
yeah.
People who are savants have that condition. Snyder has actually come up with a theory that all of us are savants. That if you get struck on the head your left hemisphere is damaged, you could become a savant.
Right, so we're all potential savants.
Right, and basically the left side that helps create these mindsets, that pays attention to these details and hangs on to them, are keeping us from being savants.
Right.
Right?
That's really interesting.
So how do you investigate something like this?
Well, he uses a process called transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yes, he does.
But we're going to call it TMS.
Yeah, it's much easier.
For our purposes. TMS was originally designed, Josh, to examine brain functions during cranial surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it focuses magnetic pulses to either suppress or enhance the electrical functions of the brain.
Yeah, it depends on the frequency of the pulses, right?
Absolutely. And we were talking, you know, privately, and I thought it sounded very relaxing, as if your brain was being massaged.
Yeah.
And disappointed. I was disappointed because you said that you don't feel anything.
You're not supposed to feel anything.
It sounds very nice to me.
It does kind of, but I think that you could probably get something like what you're describing it, like Brookstone maybe, so don't fear.
Oh, yeah, that's where you should go.
Sure.
Sharper Image, perhaps.
They're under.
Oh, are they?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, Alan Snyder started using TMS because he found this curious little side effect of people that were getting tested with TMS had some cognitive malfunctions.
Right.
So,
like speech impediments. During,
exactly.
While this thing was trained on their brain, right?
Right. But it also had some... If you put this on an average person, it had some pretty cool results.
Yeah, this is what Snyder's been doing. This is his new experiment.
Right, and it's very cool. 40% of the people, the normal folks, let's call them, that he exposed to TMS, they displayed artistic and quantitative abilities that they didn't seem to have before.
Right.
So, right on the money, it seems like it's actually tapping into a part of our brain that we have and we don't use, which sort of backs up his theory.
Right. And some of the things he puts people through, well, he uses TMS on them, which apparently it looks a lot like a shower cap.
Right.
But it has a bundle of magnetic wires in it.
Right. A thinking cap, if you will.
Yeah, which is kind of an inaccurate moniker, but an unfortunate one the press has kind of put on it.
Right. They had to label it.
Right.
It's catchy.
You got to.
Sure.
You got to get people to read, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is why we used it in the title of the article.
Exactly.
I wrote, right?
Sellouts ourselves.
Yeah. So depending on where you put it on the skull, it's going to affect that very localized region of the brain.
Right.
So, of course, Snyder's interested in training this on the left hemisphere of the brain.
Sure.
And he's actually using a low frequency, so he's depressing the left brain's function. And reportedly, like you said, 40% of people are showing results. One of the things he likes to get people to do is draw animals.
Right.
And apparently, with those 40% who show a reaction to TMS, their drawings tend to get better,
right,
or more realistic, more lifelike.
Uh-huh.
And Snyder's theory is that this drawing from memory is not based on the preconceived notions that you already have.
Right, right.
That would come from the left hemisphere of the brain. Curiously, he also has found that people can, you know, ordinary people we're talking about, can identify prime numbers from sight.
I love
from
that
a field.
Yeah, and words, I believe, proofreading grammatical errors all of a sudden out of nowhere.
So over the course of this TMS therapy or whatever, they're getting progressively better at these tasks, right?
But it only lasts about an hour, though. Is that correct?
Yes. And it may not happen at all. There's an argument out there that, like, if you draw 14 cats in a row, they're going to get better.
Right, true.
That may or may not be true. But it is pretty interesting data that he's coming up with. And I don't think arguments like that are really putting the kibosh on his investigations using TMS, right?
Right, I don't think so.
No. Which, by the way, also, I understand you said has just been approved by the FDA for use in treating depression?
So, yeah, Josh, they studied 300 people that had clinical depression in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And they found out that people that underwent the TMS therapy were twice as likely to go into remission.
That's awesome.
And they're also now, this is just as of last week, I think, are studying asking for stroke victims to volunteer for studies with TMS.
Yeah, because apparently with depression, if you train it on the frontal lobe, I believe, and you put it on a high frequency, they've actually shown that it restructures the brain. Like your neurons are restructured. And of course, in the frontal lobe, that's where your ability to regulate mood is.
Right.
So that's just weird, but very hopeful.
It is. It makes you wonder if this thing could be the key to making people smarter, curing brain disease.
Sure, yeah.
Interesting.
So I guess the takeaway from this one is the next time you meet a savant of any kind and he or she tries to impress you with their mathematical or musical skills, you can think to yourself, I could do that too if I had left side brain damage.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're not so special.
Exactly. So, Chuck, that would be what's a thinking cap and could it make me a genius? The answer is no, not really. But that's what you would type in if you wanted to go to howstuffworks.com, right?
Yes, indeed.
And I think you had something you wanted to say to everybody.
Well, yeah, Josh, this is pretty exciting. Before we get to listener mail, we are launching a blog. Not just you and I, but I believe 6 or 7 blogs on the website.
A whole mess of them.
Whole mess of them. And they gave you and I, as you know, our own little blog called Stuff You Should Know.
Yes.
Although the whole entire blog section is called Stuff You Should Know. Don't get confused.
That's yes, true. It is. I hadn't noticed that.
It
wow. Is.
They named it after us.
I need to pay more attention.
So we would like our listeners to get active. This is a call out to our listeners to get on the blogs. We're going to be discussing all kinds of cool stuff that... isn't long enough to make into a full episode. So like shorter topics on there, and we'll also be talking about the shows that we do every Tuesday and Thursday are released. So
yeah, and actually we've picked up on a couple of listener mail suggestions.
Sure.
That we've written on, so keep those ideas coming too, because Chuck and I can only do so much.
Right. So go to the website and look for blogs. It should be pretty easy to find. We'll have a URL for you very shortly.
Yeah.
And enjoy, talk to each other, connect.
That's great. What nicely done, Chuck.
Thanks.
Okay, so you know what this is, right?
It's listener mail time.
Yes, it is, Chuck.
Yes, it is. So, Josh, this week we heard from a man named Jason Devenir. Is that how you pronounce it? You know?
I don't. I've never met him. We're email pals. He works for How Stuff Works up in Chicago.
Okay, so this is an insider deal, but that's fine.
Sure.
Because Jason did write us. This is about the moon landing episode and whether or not it was faked.
Right.
Jason is a 3-time space camper, which is kind of cool. I hope you ribbed him for that.
I totally did.
And full-time nerd, self-professed.
Yeah.
And he said he was excited to see a podcast about the moon landing. When you were talking about dust on the moon, you said that in the photos, video dust appears to be clouding or kicked up more than dust would be on Earth. This would occur because the particles are airborne longer due to the lack of gravity. Mm-hmm. 1/6 the gravity, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
It's not no gravity. What didn't fit was when you insinuated that to recreate this effect on Earth, it would require a vacuumized soundstage. Josh, apparently the air has nothing to do with it. On Earth, the dust particles will rise and fall at the same rate, regardless of the presence of air in the room. The only effect air would have on a falling object is to provide resistance. When you're dealing with something as small as tiny rocks that make up this dust, air resistance would be such a small factor, it would not be perceptible to the naked eye. So, Jason, fully geeked out. Set us straight. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
And on that note, with the moon landing, we had a bunch of people write in about the Mythbusters episode where they tested out some of these theories. And they actually shot a beam of light, a laser, which I guess is a beam of light. And there are these reflectors that they left on the moon. and it bounced back, and they saw this. So
yeah,
they pretty much proved absolutely that we did land on the moon. And I don't have a list of everyone that wrote in telling us about that show, but it was a lot of folks.
Yeah, I see you have it marked lots of listeners.
Lots of listeners.
Where the name should be. Nicely done.
Yes, thank you.
Well, if you want to become Chuck's or my email buddy, you can send us an email about anything you like at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.